Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. How are you doing? Thank you so much for those of you who got in touch after last week's podcast. What great response. It was just lovely to interview Limitless M, Emma Campbell, and just great response from that. And I'm still getting messages about the podcast I did with Kaz as well. I think that was the week before. You love these personal stories and so do I. It really is magical to hear the the way people get through stuff, actually. It really lifts your spirits. I think for all of us, these personal stories are what make such a massive difference. In the Sober Club this week, I just want to share one clip from message. I have had permission, by the way. I won't name names, but had permission because one woman left the Sober Club and then rejoined and said, you know, I was doing really well. I'd managed sort of over 70 days. And then for some insane reason, I decided that I'd have a glass of champagne, which, as most of us know, is actually a bottle. Felt awful for 3 days, anxious, shame, annoyed, and felt that I'd let myself down. And to this end, I've come back. She says a bunch of other stuff. But anyway, she says, how can a seemingly sensible woman not get a grip on the fact that she can't drink without awful consequences, whether that's anxiety or whatever? So she rejoined the Sober Club and came back into the fold. And there were a few really interesting responses, you know, to that. I responded to that. And this is a question that I look at a lot, this: how can we, as seemingly sensible people, not realise the addictive effects of alcohol, not realise that actually it's not going to be good for us? And the answer to that is because, you know, we've been told by the alcohol industry for years and years and years that alcohol is a good thing. It's glamorised. It's so glamorised in our society. And even though we know it makes us feel terrible, we know it makes us throw up and look terrible and feel bloated and anxious and wake at 3 a.m. and on and on and on and on for years, still, when we're in the cold light of day or the sunshine, let's say for sake of argument, you know, the sun's out, people are drinking, it all looks so glamorous and wonderful. And the alcohol industry and the marketing would have us believe that this is the done thing and this is the way to feel confident and sexy and sassy and everything else. And so we're drawn back into it so quickly and so effortlessly. There's such a disconnect between, you know, our own emotions and our own feelings, you know, when we drink, and the so-called illusion that alcohol is out there and it's glamorous and it's wonderful. It is a disconnect, and there's a real stark contrast there. And we have to be, you know, real brave to own that and to actually admit, you know what, the Emperor's not wearing any clothes. This is just an illusion. There is nothing good about alcohol. It isn't glamorous. Yes, the packaging's beautiful, but there's nothing good about the actual toxic liquid. So that was the answer to that part of it. But then there were some really lovely responses to this post. And you know, someone else said here, I so understand where you're coming from. At over 100 days alcohol-free, I also decided to have a glass of Prosecco to share a toast with my family. That one glass turned into two bottles and opened the gateway to 3 months of drinking more and more every weekend. I felt so hungover, ashamed, powerless, bloated, sick and exhausted. And that was the lesson I needed to show me, first, it's impossible for me to moderate. And secondly, my life is so much better without alcohol in it. I reset my counter, leaned into this wonderful support network of the Sober Club, and today is my 179th day. Isn't that amazing? And you know, there's lots of messages like that. And the overriding bit of it, what I'm trying to get across, by the way, there is a point to all this, is that if you're listening to this podcast and you're however many days in, however many months in, and you have, in inverted commas, relapsed, hate that word, if you've started drinking again, completely against your better nature, and you're wishing you hadn't, it's not the end. You can just pick up. Just, you know, we beat ourselves up too much. We really, really do. When we diet, any of us have been on a diet, probably if you're listening to this as a woman, you've probably done literally hundreds of diets in your lifetime. Scary stuff. But you know what it's like. You go on a diet and you keep putting off the day you're going to start, and then you get started and you do well for a few days, and then something upsets you. Usually something affects your mood and you just think, to hell with it, and eat the whole pack of Jaffa cakes. But, you know, hopefully you get back on track the next day, right? And it's exactly the same. And that's not me giving you carte blanche to keep going back to drinking, because there's no doubt about it. It's tougher the next time. The next time you climb up, it's tougher. It will be tougher every time, but it's still worth doing, right? Always just get back on that horse and kick in again. It's not failure. It's a lesson. It's all part of the learning. You know, failure. I don't believe there's any such thing as failure. It's that, you know, it's not a crisis. It's an opportunity kind of attitude. And someone else actually put a post on that message and said, hold on, let me read it. We're all here with unconditional positive support for you. The inventor of the light bulb had over 1,000 failures before he got it right. That's so true. It's not the failures that matter. It's getting better up there and on your feet. That's what I love about the Sober Club. It is such an amazing support network. I also had a message in the week from someone who asked me whether I would answer this question on the podcast, and I've forgotten to bring it with me, but I can remember the essence of it, and it was something along the lines of she was doing really well. She'd I think ditched the booze something like 3 weeks ago, something like that, and has been doing really well, has been absolutely following my mantra of keeping the ritual, changing the ingredients, and has been having alcohol-free beers. So when her partner drinks his regular beer, she pours herself an alcohol-free beer. Everyone's happy. It's all good. And then literally on kind of autopilot, by accident, she poured herself, or someone else poured for her, a regular beer. And she drank it kind of without noticing. And she didn't even notice until the beer was finished. And she just felt terrible and just thought, oh my goodness, I've broken my days, my period of sobriety. And so her question was, you know, do I now need to go back to day one? It didn't make her want to drink more alcohol at all. She was horrified, in fact. But her question was, do I now go back to day one? And the answer is no, of course not. It's not the sip of alcohol. It's not the glass that you know, the drink that you have by accident. It's what's going on in your head, as is all of this, actually. It's all what's going on in your head. Because if it was really just the alcohol, none of us would drink. None of us really want alcohol. It's the feeling that we think it gives us. It's the connection, isn't it, to the thought process. So I hope that answers the question for you. And we just have to be careful. Somebody else said to me they copped an accidental sip of some spirit or other, and it was just horrible. It literally burns you when you're not used to it. My goodness, it's just hideous. It happened to me once, and it was such a shock. What in the hell was I doing drinking that stuff every night? What on earth was going on? Anyways, on today's alcohol-free podcast, great guests. Yet again, I've teamed up with I want to bring you more about alcohol-free drinks. I think it's, you know, just the most amazing way to really just help you get through those early months and weeks and years, because we do like something nice to drink. Why shouldn't we? So I've teamed up with Better Without app. And this is just, I mean, man, what a great project that this app is. It's called the Better Without app. I really didn't want to try to explain it to you. I thought much better to let Johnny, the creator of the app, explain what it's all about. It's free to use. It's so useful. I just think it's amazing. And we've got a nice competition as well from Johnny. So I thought I'd let you hear what Johnny has to say about the Better Without app. And then I've also got on the show Lara, who is Lara Gandini, who I came across because quite a few of my Sober Club members are from Australia. And then kind of reading some of their stuff led me to find Lara, who runs runs a Facebook group in Australia, and I thought it'd be so lovely to share her story. She's just so passionate about the work that she does. So you get a chance to listen to Lara's story. Obviously, there's a couple of things I want to remind you about later on, not least the Champneys retreats, which, you know, as they get closer, it might just happen. You just never know if things really do open up. The first one is the end of May. I think we've got one booked in June and July and another in September. So there's obviously very limited spaces, but it would just be amazing to meet some of you on those retreats. And hopefully, you know, when things open up properly, I'll arrange some very low-key meetups as well. So there'll definitely be more opportunities for people who really want to meet in person. But right now, let's hear from Johnny. Really pleased that my guest is Johnny from Better Without, which is an app. And Johnny, you're going to tell us all about, well, tell us about your background first, and then we'll get into this great app, because, I mean, well, apps are the, you know, the new rock and roll, right? And totally the new rock and roll. And yeah. And who doesn't want to find out about alcohol-free drinks? And this is going to be the easiest way. So I think this is a super exciting product and project. But tell us a bit about your background first.
Absolutely. So, thanks for having me on. So I've come from a what I define as sort of hospitality technology. So work with a lot of the major high street restaurant chains, pubs, on sort of system projects. So I did a lot of work with sort of allergen information, highlighting vegan, vegetarian dishes. So my whole background is, you know, dealing with the hospitality, food and drinks industry, but as well, sort of technology.
Interesting. And so what was the idea for this app then? What led to this?
Yeah, so I was, like most of the hospitality sector, on furlough last year. It just obviously closed down, and I was massively suffering from anxiety, and had been for a good few months. And I realized that the trigger was alcohol. And so I decided that actually I had that sort of evaluating. I drank because I like the flavors, the beers, the wine. I drank for the flavor, not for the alcohol. So I decided, you know, let's cut alcohol out. And I found it was had a massive impact on reducing anxiety. And then I thought, well, this is brilliant. There's, you know, I've found the benefit that I've got from it. And there's all these fantastic products out there. How can I make it really easy for people to discover them? And as you said, you know, app being the sort of new rock and roll, I thought, actually, wouldn't it be great if we can have an app that makes it really easy for people to discover drinks? And you can put in your taste profile. So you can say, do you like wine? What type of wine, or do you like beer, what type of thing? And you can discover drinks by food pairing, by whether it's low calories, suitable vegan, vegetarian. A real, you know, what I wanted to do is make it really easy for, you know, everyone, no matter the reason why you don't drink, or you've cut down because you're doing a marathon, or you're pregnant, or actually like me, just decided that actually you don't want to drink alcohol. How can we make it really easy for people to discover it?
There's so much I want to ask you about. It's so interesting because given that you were working, you know, in that sort of hospitality industry, as it were, and you must have had firsthand experience even before you chose not to drink. You must have seen this massive rise in alcohol-free drinks and seen the impact that's had. I'd love to know from the other side, as it were, from someone in the industry, what impact did that have on pubs and bars and functions when they must have started to see, hold on a minute, we're getting all these, you know, alcohol-free spirits suddenly want to be in our pub. We're getting people ask for kombuchas and artisan tonics. And what was it like from that side?
This is really interesting because I often compare it with sort of the vegan-vegetarian trend.
Yeah.
You know, massive links in terms of, I say trend, it's more movement of people changing their habits, their lifestyle changes,
yeah. and expecting to get that what they yeah. want when they go out.
Exactly. And so I think for me, the restaurants are starting to get there. And, you know, you can see with the likes of like Bill's, for example, have a mindful menu, you know. And
yeah, I've seen that in a few pubs yeah. actually as well now.
And they're getting, so they are getting much better. But there is a real divide. So you've got, you know, a lot of sort of more local pubs going, oh, why would I bother?
Mm.
And so there is still an education piece, I think. So it's massively, you know, gone forward. But I talk about this a lot because hospitality on and off has been closed for the last year.
Of course, yeah.
And the industry's moved on massively. I mean, I can think of probably 10, 15 brands that have come out of lockdown.
Yeah.
And so the hospitality industry has to do some catch up because yeah. people have had the chance to try all these fantastic drinks at home.
Mm.
And if they go back in and the only thing that they get offered is an orange juice,
yeah,
people will be very disappointed. So there are brands that are adopting it and are, you know, realizing that they can't just have one drink. You know, they've got to have a variety. And that's part of some of the things I'm doing is, you know, working with my old contacts in the industry, going, actually, look, people, whether it's an afternoon tea that you're going and actually you want a glass of, you know, fizz because actually you want that celebratory moment,
yeah.
but you don't yeah. want it to be alcohol. And there is many, many people out there that want that. So it is getting better. And I'm really intrigued going forward over the next, you know, when hospitality opens to see what happens, because they can't ignore it. They can't ignore what's going on. And, you know, I generally don't think it will be long before, you know, nearly every pub has a non-alcoholic draft option because why wouldn't they? And it makes so much sense. Mm. I think, you know, in the, I look at it and I look at sort of bottomless brunches and I think, well, again, why not? Mm. Why just offer Coke or anything like that? What's really interesting as well is if you look at, I look sort of all around the globe, you look at Australia was sort of behind the UK in terms of adopting low and no, but they've yeah. gone way ahead of us now because their really? Hospitality has been open.
Ah, that's interesting.
So, yeah, so it's really, so I look at all these, you know, everything going around the world and I go, and, you know, they've got their first non-alcoholic bar opening soon, you know, and there's the restaurants are adopting it a lot more. Yeah, there's great brands out there that have, you know, Seedlip as an example, have massively made it, you know.
They've managed to get into all the pubs and things, haven't they?
And actually, I think everyone I speak to and a lot of the brands, the spirit brands, you know, are really thankful for that because that, you know, to be the first is not easy in something where you're really trying to change perception.
Mm. I think it's the wines that have not happened though. You know, you've always been able to get decent alcohol-free beer and now, as you say, you can often get the kind of Seedlip mocktail kind of idea, and obviously you've got the tonics, which is great, but I think I found one pub near to me that did little small bottles, I forget the brand, of alcohol-free wine, but that's it, literally one pub.
It's really hard, and because I think there's a few things with wine. So one is, I do think the winemakers are going to have to do smaller bottles to just get into the yeah. hospitality. Because the problem is hospitality is not going to want to open a bottle just to sell a glass. So that's going to be a challenge, maybe short term. But, you know, the quality of wines, it is improving. I think carbonated wines are definitely much better, you know, like the Naughty and everything.
Yeah, Naughty's amazing.
Amazing. Yeah, absolutely amazing. But someone made a really good point to me the other day, which was around, you know, the wines are only going to be amazing when, one, obviously it takes time for people to really invest into it, but also the best grapes are always going to get used in the alcohol versions. And I had never thought of that. And it's a bit like, you know, the product that you're using, whether it's food or, you know, or grapes to go into wine, if you're using the rubbish grapes, you're never going to get the best quality product. Mm. So someone highlighted that to me the other day, and I thought that's really...
Shouldn't it be the other way around then? Should you rubbish grapes for the alcohol?
Well, you would have thought so. But it'd be interesting. Maybe that will be the shift. Yeah. Maybe in 2 years' time, we'll be having a conversation and it's going, we've now got the best grape.
Yeah. I just want to go back just before I forget, just to part of your story, you know, the fact that, you know, as you said, you noticed that your anxiety levels, you know, massively changed. And I think there is, you know, something I talk about a lot, this link between alcohol and anxiety. I can't understand why there's not more made of this. I can't get my head around why people can rock up to GPs and be given antidepressants and not even be asked about their drinking. It's just bizarre. It's great that people are noticing, and younger people, you know, like you are noticing this. But did you find, I know, again, it was probably lockdown, so you weren't having the same experiences necessarily, but I just wonder how difficult it was for you in the early weeks, having made that choice. Mm. You know, what's it like for a young guy now, sort of out and about, choosing not to drink? Do you find the sober shamers coming at you? Or did you feel really quite confident to just say, do you know what, it reduces my anxiety, I'm good?
So that's a really interesting point, because I've, you know, over previous years, I'd sort of done dry January and, you know, I'd all, you know, naturally quite a lot of my friends, they do like to drink. And I think for me, yeah, there was almost like, as soon as dry January previously finished, it was like, right, you know, that they would be very much, let's get back drinking. And I think originally they thought, oh, maybe it was me just going, actually, I don't want to drink and for a bit. But when I think I shared about the anxiety and actually how much it had helped, I think, you know, they couldn't shame that. You know, you'd be inhumane if you started saying, oh, well, that's rubbish. I mean, you can't. And, you know, I think it as well, I don't preach about it, and I don't, you know, for me, it's not about, I'm not anti-alcohol. I've chosen not to drink, and that's my thing. But what's really interesting that I have noticed is, you know, that first lockdown, so many people really were drinking a lot. And I've noticed more and more people, you know, going, you know, and choosing non-alcoholic versions and through some of my friendship groups and some of the people I know. And I think they just realized that actually there isn't that pressure to drink. And that's why I really hope the restaurants get on board and the pubs much quicker, especially with stuff like non-alcoholic and draft. And yeah, there's that big thing about sort of men having a pint.
Yeah,
and
being seen with the right glass.
That for me is is a big thing. It's getting the pubs to go. Don't just give, you know, a bottle of beer and a dirty, you know, sort of highball glass, because actually having a pint makes a big difference, and that becomes socially acceptable. And actually, people don't really know what you're drinking.
No, exactly.
It doesn't matter. But you're right. I think initially there was that moment of going, oh, why is this?
And then so tell us a bit more about the actual app then. What's on it? I'm guessing you're educating us to some of the amazing choices.
So we launched, so I came up with the idea last July, 2 days later had the designs done, a week later put it in development, and 16 weeks later we launched. So it was like a rapid, you know, get it launched. We started, we have 40 brands involved. We now have 150 brands.
Wow.
Which is amazing. And that's across sort of all categories. So as you say, your beer, your cider, your wines, kombuchas.
Great.
Kombuchas, you know.
It's really taken off finally, hasn't
really
it? Finally. And didn't it take the UK ages to do that?
It really did. But now there's loads of brands, which is brilliant. And look, it's an acquired taste, and not everyone's going to like it. We've got sort of a new category that's coming in, which is sort of alternative brew. So it's mm-hmm. sort of mixed between almost beer style brewing, but kombucha mm-hmm. style. So once you download the app and you sign up, you can then search for different drinks, so by category, and as I say, you could even filter by food. Mm-hmm. So I'm pairing it with, you know, beef. What beers go well with beef?
Perfect. Yeah. That's great. And, so if you're having a dinner party and you want to, you know, have an alcohol-free dinner party, you can actually decide, okay, what are you going to serve?
Yeah. Love it. For me, I thought, well, that exists in the alcohol world. You know, it's such a big thing. Is sort of, and you look on every, you know, wine, everything, it just pairs well. Well, why aren't we doing it in the same? Why aren't we treating it the same? These are quality products. Then you can go by country. So if you wanted to try beer from Belgium or anything, and then we allow reviews. So I wanted to make it very unbiased reviews that I often find. If I go online and I see a review on, you know, some of the sort of more major high street sort of supermarkets, people often review the products assuming it was alcohol, and it's like, well, that's not a fair review. And so for me, it was going, people are on the app because they know and want to choose non-alcoholic options, so they're going to give a much fairer review. So you can have that. You can add items to your wish list, so things you may want to try. You can find out where to buy them.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, just tell me a bit more about the actual purchasing then. So we don't buy through your app, but you presumably send us direct to the brand or to distributors like Wise Bartender.
Yeah, absolutely that. So I say we, you know, obviously buying from the brand is always good. Supporting the brand directly is very good. But yes, we work with like some Wise Bartender, Sober Source, to be able to go, you know, this is where you can buy these drinks. And as I say, that's where, you know, what we do. We are also, once hospitality opens, going to build out that sort of network of actually, I want to go and try, you know, a beer on draft. Where can I go and try?
Oh, great. That would be really useful.
So that's something we're busy away working on.
What's your view on, you know, one of the things I often tell people is if you're in the early weeks of ditching the booze and you're going out, and ring ahead and find out, you know, what they've got so that you don't rock up and then somebody, you know, you meet some friends, they hand you your usual drink and then you're off and you, oh my goodness, you know, all the best laid plans. You've got to prep ahead. You know, you've got to tell people before you go, oh, by the way, I'm not drinking, whatever reason you want to give. But then you need to know in advance exactly what you're going to drink. So it's a great idea to know what the venue sells. So what's your view on if the venue is rubbish and they really do not have, you know, any good alcohol-free choices, what's your view on taking your own? Whether you ring them ahead and say, I want to bring my own, can I pay corkage? What's your view on that?
That's a really interesting question. I personally think, absolutely, if they, you know, if you ring ahead and ask because they haven't got something that they offer you, then you should feel comfortable in a hospitality setting to be able to relax and enjoy. And if they haven't got the options, then I think that's important. Interestingly enough, one of the things that we will look to add to the app at some point is the ability to feedback. So if you've gone to a venue and they've run out of beer, and I found this in the summer, I went out twice and both venues didn't have the options. And I thought, that's so annoying that, you know, they won't ever know that I've tried purchasing that. But wouldn't it be great if we could feed that back to them to say, do you know what? 10 people tried to buy alcohol-free beer at your place today and they couldn't. So for me, it's like hospitality. The whole idea of hospitality is to make you feel welcome. So I thought about this recently about, if I was going out for an afternoon tea with my mum or something, would I ring ahead and go, you know, I would like, you know, do you have a bottle of sparkling? Or, you know, if they didn't, I'll bring a bottle of water?
Absolutely,
and that for me, it's
and by the way, if you do that, you don't want to be paying corkage for the price of the wine. You pay corkage for the price of a soft drink.
Yeah.
I'm right about that, aren't I? So that, because they, as a non-drinker, you would have ordered a soft drink. Yeah. So you pay corkage for the price of the soft drink.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, I think that is fair. I mean, I do think that it won't be long. Hospitality will.
I hope so.
Absolutely.
I think one of the areas that certainly before lockdown, and of course we don't know what it's going to be like after, but before lockdown, what used to frustrate me most was events, functions. Mm-hmm. That was the area of hospitality that didn't seem to be up to speed at all. Mm. So you know, most pubs you go into, most restaurants have got some options, but when I went to an awards event, for example, or I went to a trade show, and then there was a party as part of the trade show, Excel, you know, that kind of thing, one after the other, where you walk in and the drinks are free, in inverted commas, and there's red wine, there's white wine, there's sometimes beer. Or champagne, and then for the non-drinkers, it is literally, if you're lucky, one jug of warm orange juice.
Yeah,
there's not all
sparkling water.
Well, if you're lucky, look, a few venues didn't even have that. And as a non-drinker, you're meant to have your crappy orange juice or water in a nasty glass, and you are literally treated like a second class citizen. It's appalling. It's literally appalling that should happen, you know, anymore moving forward. And I've often joked about it and said, you know, we know that it's cool to not drink now, for God's sake. If I rock up with Zoe Ball or Elton John or Russell Brand, you're going to offer them a crappy warm orange juice? I don't think so.
Yeah, right? We've absolutely. So events is definitely one. Events, you know, weddings.
Yeah.
You know, because making people just feel comfortable, and you know why? And that's, you know, you would ask, if you're going to a wedding, you would ask, is there any vegans or vegetarians?
Yeah, exactly. Your dietary requirements.
I completely agree, and I think the event side. One thing in the summer last summer that really annoyed me, when I'd given up drinking, my friends were going out, won't name the place, but to a sort of a bottomless brunch in the city. And I phoned ahead and I said, look, I don't drink. What can you offer me?
Mm.
And it was Coke.
And I said,
but they wanted £38.
Yeah. Did you say to them, by the way, I'm not 12?
Yeah. Well, I actually refused to go, because I was like,
surprised.
I'm not paying £38 for Coke and substandard food. And, you know, for me, I'm, you know, working with some of the drinks brands to go, look, let's show these venues that actually, if they put this on, they will attract a lot of people.
Yeah. Because, you know, also some of these alcohol-free drinks are relatively expensive. They're not far off the same price as the alcoholic, which is fair enough, some of the artisan brands. But so the pubs and the hospitality industry are losing a ton of money, because if you're only choosing your soda water and whatever, they're losing money. So they may as well be offering this, right?
I don't think it will be long, and I'm just intrigued to see what happens.
Exciting. Well, it's super exciting, and I love it. I think it's just such a great project. So the app is free. How do people access it? Is it on, I don't know what the question is, iPhone and Android? Is that the question?
That's it. So it's on both Apple and Android. So on App Store and Google Play. Go and download it, and we're always keen to hear feedback, and
can you also find out about the any of the ingredients? You know, I'm often asked, well, how much sugar has that one got, or you know, what about the calorific value of X?
So we put in calories. We are looking at the sugar.
What about if something is gluten free?
Yeah, we've got that as a tag. So gluten free, vegan, vegetarian.
Oh,
we allow people to put ingredients. So if the brand wants to put ingredients, they can. We also do a whole like story about the brand. So, you know, I'm really passionate. There's so many of these artisan brands, and you know, there a lot of them are startups. Let's tell their story. We also have a podcast that interviews the founders, because I think that the founder stories are brilliant.
I know they are. I've been doing a lot of that, and it is lovely, isn't it? It really is lovely when you get to hear what's behind it. Some of them are, as you know, some of them are come from the drinks industry and they've been producing drinks, and then others have never done anything like that before. And it's really interesting, isn't it, how they get started.
It really is. So you can download it there, and we've got lots of exciting features and things to come.
Brilliant. So people find it by just going on to whatever app store they're on, and it's called Better Without. Thank you so much, Johnny. It's such an exciting project. I love it. Thank you. I really appreciate it. All the best. And I look forward to see how it develops. I think once you've got your kind of links to more and more pubs and restaurants and stuff, that'll make it, amazing.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Johnny. So if you go to thesoberclub.com and click on the blog post there, you'll see there's a competition to win a Better Without hoodie. They're really cool. I'd love one. And also a competition to win some beers from Sober Source. So that's a competition courtesy of the Better Without app. And as promised, let's hear from Lara. Well, I've been wanting to go to Australia and do some sober stuff for so long, and it's just not fair. Next best thing, I'm going to at least bring one Australian to me. Welcome Lara Gandini. She's a former ballet dancer who trained from a young age at many of the world's leading classical ballet institutions and later had a brief professional career, which was cut short due to a major back injury. Now she's a dance teacher and successful business owner. Got to know Lara was because she set up a Facebook group, Happy AF Sober in Australia. Welcome, Lara.
Oh, thanks for having me, Janie. It's just so lovely to finally cyber meet you.
Yeah, and cyber meet, exactly.
Oh, well, I really hope one day.
I know. Oh, God, yeah, don't even go there. One day. One day I'm going to come to Australia. I'm going to do some meetings. You know, the really frustrating thing was that I think I first came across you because one of my Sober Club members is several of them are from Australia. One was in Sydney, I think, and had connected with you. And that's how I came across the group. And that woman, Cindy, you may know Cindy, was due to come to the UK last summer. And we'd actually set up a Sober Club event just for her. You know, we'd put the whole thing on. We were going to go to Redemption Bar, which is a sober bar.
Yes, I've heard of it.
Oh, and we were going to do a retreat, and it was just everything was planned, you know. And then, there you go.
Just
anyways,
yes. Well, I had ideas actually early on, pre-COVID as well, of getting. Doing some sort of an event and getting yourself and William Porter and even Dawn Connolly out, you know, and do a bit of a workshop kind of thing in each capital city. I mean, imagine that. It'd be fantastic.
Wouldn't it be great?
Yeah.
It'll happen.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's talk about you. So we'll talk about the Facebook group later, but let's just talk a bit about your background because, you know, that's a thing, isn't it, being a ballet dancer?
Was a thing. Yeah, definitely. And I think... with regards to sort of my drinking journey, I call it my drinking career, it was slightly different to probably a lot of other people because I was locked away in a boarding school in Monte Carlo for 3 years in my teenage years, so where most of my peer group would have been out partying. And then probably in my 20s, I certainly would go to a party, but I wasn't, certainly not drinking regularly. In my 20s, I probably would have stepped up a little bit more, partying. I was a bit of a party girl and I certainly could drink. I seem to be able to metabolise alcohol quite a lot, something embarrassingly now I think I was quite proud about, I could drink the guys under the table sort of thing, but it wasn't frequent, it was very very rare, very random. So really for me, it's funny, isn't it, because now being sober just over 2 years now, I don't know about you, Janie, but I constantly sort of keep looking back and thinking, where did it become a problem? Was there a switch? Was there a line I jumped? Because for so long, you're in control until you're not.
Yeah.
So Anyway, that's another conversation. But so I probably though didn't start drinking regularly until I had children. Isn't that terrible?
Wow.
But I just think it's so universal, actually, and there's a lot of mummies out there
that are
stuck in the same trap that I think you were in, and I certainly was in. Where it was just that nightly glass of wine, making dinner. That's sort of how it started to unwind. I think I used it as a stress relief. So it was very sort of busy, always busy. That's where I was a mum and running a business. And so, so initially though, you know, and I had obviously didn't drink when I was pregnant with my children. I had a little surprise pregnancy when I was 43. So I have an eight-year-old child now, at 52 years of age. So I had a big gap in between my second and third child. And he didn't drink with my pregnancy with my third child either. So it would have sort of come in, you know, it would have come in. I was still in control, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. I could stop. But I think things escalated definitely, probably after third child, things getting even more busy. And then sort of 2016 was a really rough year. I lost my father and I hadn't really experienced grief at all in my life. I'd been really quite lucky in that sense, hadn't lost any family member I sort of could remember. And I took that pretty badly. And within the same month, my relationship, my partner broke up. So within that 30 days, it was very, very difficult time. And that's when I think for me, it sort of started to spiral a bit out of control. I think I was using then, at that point, I was using alcohol to cope with the grief, perhaps. Whereas before it was just more of a stress release. But, you know, I think, Janie, like you, that it really is a spectrum. It's a continuum, isn't it? And you know, from sort of when you very first start drinking to where you end up sort of out of control, I think, you know, you call it the grey area.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting, isn't it, that you know, a lot of people drink for years and years and they don't believe they have a, in inverted commas, problem. But then, as you say, when life events happen, or, you know, if someone dies or they have, you know, I don't know, financial worries or whatever it might be, something kind of hits them. That's when they may or may not notice that drink becomes the default. So,
that's,
you know,
right,
the way of coping becomes drink, because, of course, you know, in our society, drink is surprisingly the answer to everything.
allegedly. And even at the time that I decided to, well, actually, initially I was just going to have a 30-day break and reset, like a lot of people, you know. I thought I could just needed a break so I could get back to, you know, moderation, as you do. And initially, sort of at that point, I don't think I would have said that I had a real problem, Janie.
No,
you know,
of course.
I think I would have just thought I was quite normal, you know, mum having a few glasses of wine at night. But of course, it just increases, doesn't it? So my couple of glasses turned into a bottle, and then some nights it was, you know, almost two bottles. And and then I know for me, when it got to that point, probably in those last 2 years leading up, where, oh boy, you know, waking up at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, just not being able to get back to sleep, and just then, you know, promising myself, you know, here's me, a very disciplined, you know, person. I've had to have a lot of discipline in my life and very motivated, but you know, I promised myself in the morning, I'm not going to drink tonight. And there I'd be at 5 o'clock that night with a glass of Margaret River Chardonnay in my hand, and thinking, oh God, here I go again. And when I knew.
Yeah. Let me just take you back in time a bit, to when, sure, you know, when you you're a dancer for a while. Tell us what happened then, to cut short that career. And how that felt for you.
So that was a disc injury. Yeah, that was tough. So I was over in Monte Carlo at the time. I was studying at the, at the lead up to, I was studying at the Academy Princess Grace. which was an amazing experience. and I had started dancing professionally with the Ballet Monte Carlo and the Opera of Monte Carlo over there. And then I was sort of at that point of auditioning, really. I wanted to get out of I've been in Monte Carlo for 3 years, and I know that sounds crazy, but it's a very small place. I wanted to, you know, I actually had my sights, I think, in a company in Germany at that time. And so, yeah, my back, it was a disc injury, a herniated disc injury. They now, so I had massive deterioration in my L4 and L5. And S1 discs. They said it was like, you know, a 60-year-old man who'd been, you know, hauling bricks all his life. So my dad later presented with these same issues, and they think it was probably a bit, congenital, that it just come on earlier. So at that time I decided, I was very lucky. My mum actually has a very large, she's got a big presence here as a ballet teacher, and she had a big ballet school. So I did, follow suit at the time and started teaching, which has actually ended up being, I think, more of a passion than the actual performance, would you believe? So it's funny how life works.
That's good. Is it an industry where people drink a lot? I mean, people sometimes ask me this, you know, having been in the music business, you know, they talk about how people drink a lot in the music business, and they do, but in actual fact people drink a lot in every industry.
but
we do tend to think of ballet particularly as you mentioned that discipline. Is there more of a focus on health? I did a degree many years ago in dance, and it was the dancers who always smoked and drank.
Well, that was it.
More than the rest of us.
Yeah, bang on. And I was a very heavy smoker as well. That's another topic. I read Alan Carr's book, To Quit Smoking. So I quit about 10 years ago now, but I was on 40 a day. And smoking in the 80s in ballet was
big
huge.
Thing, wasn't it
was rife.
And
the Australian Ballet School where I went in the company, they were sponsored by Benson and Hedges back then.
Oh, my goodness.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? And I remember our pianists at the Australian Ballet School, the pianists or some of the teachers would be sitting there smoking. It was just in the studio while we're dancing. But it was very much part of the culture, Janie, because a lot of the company professional dancers would smoke to keep their weight down. That's where it all sort of came from. Certainly I never really had to worry about that. It was just part of the culture. So you just did it, and of course, like the alcohol, I just became addicted to cigarettes as well. But the drinking, I honestly, look, certainly there were party times, but, you know, you wouldn't be drinking on a daily basis with your performances, because you can't sort of, I think there might have been in some places, there might have been a bit more of a, certain companies I heard rumours of other drugs perhaps, but not so much alcohol. Certainly at a party after a season, yes. I don't think it was a huge part, because you had to perform, you know, physically and nutrition, health is, you know, something that's sort of foremost on your mind as well.
Yeah. So. And you mentioned, you know, the kids and the drinking sort of ramping up slowly rather than all at once. And certainly here in the UK, there's a fairly big kind of parenting, you know, mummy wine culture thing. I don't know if it's spoken about much, but it just does happen. It's not sort of promoted as much as it is. I mean, I've seen, you know, some of the marketing from the States where you've got these kind of t-shirts, you know, that say baby on the hips, wine on the lips and all of that. I mean, we haven't got a huge amount of that marketing, but it's more insidious than that. You know, lots of, if it's, you know, for Mother's Day, it's always, you know, every card has a picture of gin and tonic on it. And
absolutely.
And every kind of play date, and I guess it's the same in Australia that association. And if you want to make friends with someone, the deal is you'll take them wine, right?
That's it, yeah. Or it would be with younger children, you know, the play dates. Not so much. So I've got two older children who are 21 and 19, and this is interesting because I don't remember it so much with their age, whereas now, as I said earlier, I've got an eight-year-old, big gap, it's rife. You know, yeah. And it is. It's most mums' play dates after school, which is what, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, even.
Yeah.
Starting, and then they're driving home. And I think that's one of my really big passions with the group, and hopefully somehow I can tap into that. To reach out there to mums in particular. Because yeah. I think like you and in England, here in Australia, there's a massive, I call it like a silent underground kind of, suburban addiction there going on. And a lot of women, because you hear when they come out, right, they're hiding bottles. I don't remember hiding bottles, but, you know, some parents, was it Claire Pooley? I think she said she hid a bottle.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's universal now. And you've got the glamorization of it with movies. I used to love Sex in the City, hey, with all the Cosmopolitans, and absolutely fabulous. Wasn't that, it was brilliant. That probably influenced me. But now you've got things like Bad Moms, you know, that American Bad Moms.
Yeah.
I think there was another one just recently. I can't remember the name of it. Not good with names of movies. But, so it's still glamorised, or it's still normalised, should I say.
Yeah, that, yeah.
You know,
I mean, the other thing is that, you know, I know this is huge stereotyping here, but we think of Aussies as big, you know, beer drinkers, really, don't we? And or certainly big boozers. You know, you have your barbecues and you have your beer. Is that true, or is that just some ridiculous stereotype?
No, it is. But that's more the 80s. So now it's far more wine.
Is it? Okay.
Because Australia has some
fabulous wineries.
And they have a lot of exports as well now, I believe, to China. But where I live in Perth, down south, we call the southwest, is the Margaret River region, and they're meant to be some of the best wines in the world, similar to California. Over east, you've got Adelaide Hills, in Melbourne as well, you've got a lot of boutique wineries. And it's very much about, you know, the class now, I think.
Right, okay, that's interesting.
But there's still that beer element. I think that's probably a little bit more out in the country, but it's a bit more refined, I would have said, way back in my drinking days.
Yeah.
But it's all just poison at the end of the day.
Absolutely. I know you said, that you'd what changed for you was, after your 30-day break, you extended it, and then, you got yourself inspired and read some Quick Lit books, and you found my podcast, didn't you?
I did, Jamie. And it was just, still it's just, it was a breath of fresh air, because I think so much of it is identifying, isn't it? And as I said, because when you're stuck in that trap of that mummy wine thing and drinking nightly and trying, you're not even realising yourself, but you are trying to hide it to a certain extent, that you don't realise there's other women out there that are going through the same thing. And it was picking up, Annie Grace's book and then listening to your podcast. And I think I saw a TED talk with Claire Pooley as well. All those things are just so important. But I dearly loved your podcast in particular. Who doesn't, Janie? I love the way you interview. But you got fantastic guests. I just thought I really related very much to you.
Yeah. And the other thing that I found interesting, sort of following a little bit of your journey, is, here in the UK, as you know, we've had the most unbelievable rise in popularity of alcohol-free drinks. Literally an explosion. And even just in the sort of 3 and a bit years that I've been sober, the increase in choice has been huge.
Isn't that fantastic?
And it's absolutely amazing. And then I'll put something, within the sober club, and one of my Australian members, well, and the US, interestingly, because for once they're behind us, will sort of say, oh my goodness, well, I can't get this in Australia. And you're so lucky. So I know it's changing. So what is the scene like now?
So there's definitely, there's definitely some more coming out. Now, whether or not I'm more aware because of the group, we've got Etch Sparkling, the owners and creators of that are in the group, gorgeous couple. And there's another one called Sober Beverages, I think, which is more like a beer drink.
You must have Liars, because like, I mean, Liars are from Australia, so presumably they sell there.
See, I don't actually drink kind of I love my soda water.
Okay. I'm guessing you do have Liars spirits there, and also I know you can get Naughty there now. Have you tried Naughty, the sparkling alcohol free?
No, haven't tried that. But there's also, I remember it. Christmas, actually, because I did go and buy some alcohol-free beers for my son. Actually, I don't know if you remember, you chipped in on that conversation with my Christmas. I was hosting Christmas and I didn't want to have alcohol. Do you remember?
I do.
And you answered, and I didn't want to have alcohol, and I had to tell my family, come for Christmas lunch, it's a no booze affair. They were fantastic in the end. I don't even know why I was worried. But I got some the Heineken Zero beers for them. And I remember I had to go around to quite a few liquor stores to get them because they'd all sold out. So that was a, you know, good sign. I don't know statistically sort of, you know, how well it's taking off for people. For producers here. But look, the sober community now is definitely gaining traction for sure, and you can see in the media the conversation, you know, like a lot of those articles of the glass of red wine was healthy for you, they seem to be disappearing now, and there's more articles and stories in mainstream media I'm finding of people that have gone sober and the positive benefits of going sober.
That's you know, that's really good. I mean, I often say that I'm not suggesting prohibition by any means, but I just think that if it can become as normal to choose not to drink as to drink, won't that be great?
Exactly. You know? Yeah. I mean, I do liken it to the tobacco industry and cigarettes. You know, how fabulous would it be that if we can get there, but it might not be in my lifetime, but you know, hopefully for grandchildren.
And what about younger people in Australia? Again, in the UK, you know, there is this rise of the sort of mindful drinkers and a bunch, quite a lot of millennials choose not to drink at all. And then there's a rise in sort of mindful drinkers. They certainly don't, younger people certainly don't drink the way we did. I don't think. Same in Australia.
No. Well, look, I find that a little hard to know for sure. I can only speak for my own children. So my 21-year-old son, very much into the party mode, a bit like his mother was at the same age. But he is also very disciplined. He plays football. And my older daughter, who's 19, she's actually an elite athlete. She plays football for the West Coast Eagles over here. And she doesn't drink at all. So that could be related more to her discipline with the sport. But I think they are becoming more aware. And this is what I was going to say, you know, that even with our generation, if we can just get more knowledge out there, so, you know, health warnings on bottles. But, you know, I didn't know, Jamie, that alcohol was a Group 1 carcinogen, you know. He was me and my healthy eating and clean, you know, lifestyle and drinking what I thought would just, you know, fermented grapes. That was all right,
it's
wasn't it?
Bizarre.
You know, I had no idea.
I know, it's bizarre, isn't it? How can we not know this? I'm aghast that I hadn't worked that one out.
Yeah, and the statistics, you know, 6,000 people in Australia died from alcohol-related causes last year in Australia. You know, we've only got a population of 26 million. That's a lot. You know, this sort of stuff needs to be out there. 1 in 5 breast cancers is, you know, caused by alcohol.
What that about the lockdown stuff, over there? Do you think the lockdown had an impact?
We didn't. I shouldn't laugh. We didn't in Perth really have any lockdown.
Oh, wow. Jamie. Okay.
We had about 4 weeks last year. We were probably the most fortunate city in the world. We're the most isolated city in the world. So our premier, who looks after our state, closed the borders. And so kept us all protected in a plastic bottle, or bubble, I should say. We did have one little scare there in January. We thought it was coming through. He closed the borders again. We went to lockdown for about 4 or 5 days. So for Perth people, I don't think it's been an issue. However, Melbourne certainly went through far more lockdowns. And I know through the group definitely that some of our Victorian members, yeah, were having definite problems there with an increase of drinking.
So just tell us about the group then and what you're aiming to do with people in Australia.
So when I set it up, it was actually not long after I'd started my sober journey, and I couldn't find actually a group or sort of sober events to go to. And I just thought, how easy would this be? I had had experience in admining another Facebook group before, so I thought, this is easy, I'll just set up a group. So actually, Janie, it had initially, I designed it so that people could set up sober events in their capital city and sort of post them in the group, but it hasn't really resulted into that. It's just become this beautiful community of sober and sober curious members. So some there haven't quite started their journey, but are definitely, you know, looking into it and are open to learn. And so it's very supportive. I want to keep it very positive. I want it to keep it very respectful, that, you know, whatever method you use to become sober is fine. I don't want it to become one of those aggressive kind of dogmatic groups, if I can. But, yeah, just sharing lots of articles, lots of information. Having you, of course, in the group is wonderful. We've got William Porter as well. He's very busy now, of course. And Dawn Comely from Soberfish, she contributes a bit in there. So it's all about sharing information, tips, and, yeah, being positive and supportive. So I'd love to put that out there. If there's anyone, you know, in Australia that is just even, you know, considering it or feeling like they're stuck in a bit of a trap and just not sure, just to come and find us.
Yeah, fantastic. So it's Happy AF Sober in Australia. And
that's right.
So let's visualise this meetup, right?
Oh, yes.
Visualize it, because I really, really do want to come out there and
it would be wonderful. Absolutely wonderful, Janie. And yeah, come and see me in Perth, and then you can see, is it Cindy in Sydney? And I might travel around with you. That would be fantastic. And let's see if we can get an event going on down here.
Hope so. Laura, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're so welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's lovely to meet you. Thanks, Janie.
So just a reminder, make sure you check out the Sober Club if you want accountability and connection and support. We focus on everything to do with optimum health and well-being underpinned by sobriety. There really is something there for everyone, whatever stage you're at, from day one to year six, some of our members are. Because, you know, we focus on the everything. It's whatever's going on for you. We've got guests as diverse as... we've got someone coming up talking about... making kombucha. I've got a kombucha making workshop. That's going to be fun. I've got someone talking about identity and how you step into the new identity that is you as a non-drinker, which is going to be really cool. We did something recently on how we manage our money. We've got an organic hairdresser going to be chatting to us. It's it really is everything. And of course not all of you want to join in every bit, but there's so much there, not least our course Get the Buzz Without the Booze, which of course you can use for any behavior change you want to make. So there's lots there, so check it out, thesoberclub.com. Obviously I have to give you another little plug for my book, When Will It Be Cool to Stop. I don't know. It's called Happy Healthy Sober: Ditch the Booze and Take Control of Your Life. And I'm also doing an audio book, so it's a little bit time consuming getting into the studio, but that will be with you soon. I am reading it myself, so I look forward to that, being able to tell you about that when it's when it's finally due for release. Make sure you check out those Champneys retreats as well. Go to thesoberclub.com and click on events to find out more about that. And in the next few weeks, I'm really pleased to be bringing you an interview with the lovely Lotta Dan, author of Mrs. Deer's Going Without and Mrs. Deer's Going Within, and now The Wine O'Clock Myth. So really looking forward to that. And any other guests you'd like me to try and get hold of, just let me know. I can give it a shot. Make sure you follow me on social at Janie Lee Grace. And we have a Facebook page at Happy Healthy Sober as well. So don't forget, there's often some great competitions like the one I mentioned from earlier from Better Without app. And you'll find all of that stuff at thesoberclub.com. I'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.